We're live. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Honey Badger Hour. It's your boy, the Badger, and today we're back. Thank you all for tuning in, guys. Make sure to like and subscribe, all right? Hit the little notification bell below right here. Boop, boop. Check us out at honeybudgetlifestyle.com for all of our merch, okay, and upcoming updates that we got on comedy events and all that good stuff, guys. Check us out on social media, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, across all platforms. Thank you very much, guys, and let's get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, back in studio, we got a big one. Today, we are joined by former boxer, bare knuckle badass, my man. I'm really excited for this one. Coming all the way from England, Tyler Goodjohn.
Thank you for that lovely introduction.
My man.
Thank you.
Hey, I appreciate you coming down to Miami, brother.
Hey, it's living the dream, man. Living the dream here in Miami.
Oh, man. So, tell us your story, my brother. Introduce yourself to the fans.
So, I'm Tyler Goodjohn. I go by the name of El Tornado. I started boxing at age 10. I'm from a very desolate, small place back home in England. My dad's a farmer. I'm a farm boy. I'm a country kid. I started boxing at 10 just to be honest, my parents sent me to the boxing gym just to lose weight because I was quite a fat kid. I lost my first 6 fights as an amateur and just kept at it. I mean, I was 11 years old, so I perhaps didn't have the pressure of my friends telling me to pack it in, but kept at it, and here I am 22 years later.
Wow. Yeah, man, I saw you at the amateur shows just recently in PFL, and I've seen you on a few podcasts and stuff like that. So what brings you to Miami from England?
It's a long story. It's an interesting story. Obviously, I signed for BKFC, the bare knuckle here in America, 3 years ago. I come over in the middle of the pandemic by myself. The first time I had to quarantine in Dubai. And I then went to Vegas, trained by myself in Vegas for about 4 weeks, 6 weeks. And then I fought Charles Bennett in my debut BKFC in Mississippi. Went back to England and then I got the call. Did I want to come and do it all again? The quarantining, this time I had to go Dominican Republic. And I ended up fighting Luis Palomino, the pound for pound BKFC champ by myself. So... 2 weeks after that, Luis Palomino rang me up. Look, I want you to be part of my management, part of my team. I want you here at my gym. And like I say, here I am.
And that's how you end up in Miami. Yeah, so fighting Palomino in Miami, in Florida, is what brought you to start your journey here in Miami. Man.
He's, out of everyone, you know, obviously the circumstances weren't great for that fight. And he got on the mic afterwards and just said, look, you know, this guy come over here by himself, no training team, got anyone to be in his corner, had to quarantine for 15 days in Dominican Republic, and he said, look, I'm basically a fan. And we chatted a couple of weeks later on the phone, and he said, look, I'm a fan of you, man. Like, you know, you can't teach what you've got. You come over here looking for me by yourself. And, yeah, that respect has got me here, got me a work visa, and I'm here for the next couple of years.
Wow, that's a great story. My brother, you went and fought. Okay, so yeah, people don't even know, man. During the pandemic, everybody, there's a lot of fights that happened during the pandemic that a lot of guys were like, people don't know some of the training camps, you know, that like people had. Like I know like my buddy like Dan Hooker, right, in the UFC, when he fought Dustin Poirier, he was training like at home, like hitting the bag because he was like in Auckland, New Zealand, crazy lockdown. Yeah. And he ended up fighting 5 rounds in the Apex, you know. So then you have, there's so many stories I know of guys like you, of things like this that ended up happening. And we got to do what we got to do to fight because we get paid to fight, right?
100%, man. You know, like my job back home in England, I had my own gym back in England, obviously with COVID. That shut that down. I actually lost that business. So at that point, I wasn't making any money. And I was like, do you know what? This is, let me just say this as well. So about 4 months before my BKFC debut, I was actually at a party in the middle of COVID, which, you know, everyone was doing. But I was at a party and I actually got sucker punched and I actually got my jaw snapped and I lost 6 teeth. And it severed the nerve in my face. I still can't feel that my bottom lip or my bottom teeth now. And that was 4 months before my BKSC debut. I had it operated. I've got plates and I've got screws in my jaw now. And 6 weeks later, I was out in Dubai quarantining, training by myself to then go out to America and fight bare knuckle. A lot of people don't know that, but yeah, it was.
You got into like a fight or something, or?
So I got into like an altercation at a party. A lot of shouting and everything else, bit of drink involved, you know how it goes.
Yeah, for sure.
And later that night, someone punched me from the side, and another professional fighter, he was a professional fighter as well.
No way.
Yeah, and took my jaw straight off my face.
Bro, you got sidelined, you got sucker punched by a fighter.
By a professional.
That's even more dangerous, because when you tell me you got sucker punched, like, oh, fuck, you know? I know pro friends, we've gotten into rumbles on the street, and like, I've seen guys get stumbled, because street fights are crazy, bro.
Yeah.
Oh my God, man. But to get hit by somebody who knows how to punch, and not, that's terrible, man.
Yeah, it was bad. Like I say, I've plates, I've got screws, I lost six teeth, and I've lost all feeling in my bottom lip. Which probably helps for me getting punched now, I don't know, but at the time it sucked. And like I say, looking back on that time in my life, I'd obviously been signed by BKFC at that point. So I was like, do you know what? I ain't letting this guy ruin my dream of going to America. So I had the operation, and after like a week, I got back into training. And then, like I say, within like, I think it was like 6 weeks after the operation, I was in Dubai training, and then got over to America, and then like a month or so later, I was fighting. I fought Charles Bennett in my bare knuckle fight. I think the scariest thing was, obviously, I hadn't sparred since breaking my jaw, and obviously I'm in the gym, I'm out there on my own. I need sparring, so I was in Vegas, and I was at this Mexican gym. I can't think what it's called, Johnny Taco's gym in Las Vegas, full of Mexican fighters, and I've gone in there by myself. Obviously, I've not been hit on my jaw since I've had the operation, and I've just jumped in there, and I thought, there's only one way to find out. And I was sparring with all these mad Mexicans, and they're landing these bombs. I'm like, well, at least my jaw's holding up to it now. So I'm sweet.
You had a good little test. You had a good little test. You're like, all right. If you can withhold the Mexicans, you're going to be all right, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, so that's where you did your little pre-fight prep in Vegas, right?
Yeah,
Vegas is like a good little fight time.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, obviously, it was the pandemic, so it was actually, weird, man, because like Vegas was at like 25% capacity. So like, it was dead. It was dead. It was like a ghost town. But, you know, obviously, there's really good fight gyms out there, so I was getting around, like I say, doing lots of sparring and just training myself. But yeah, it was a weird time, man. Like literally that strip on Vegas was dead.
Wow, yeah. And then you ended up fighting in the Hard Rock. Then you came down to Florida. Like, so when did you get to Florida? Like fight week? You rolled up fight week?
Yeah.
So hey, no corner for the fight? Or you brought like one of your mates to hold water or something?
Yeah, so against Palomino, I quarantined for 15 days in Dominican Republic. And I had a 3 p.m. curfew as well. So you had to be indoors by 3 p.m. So it meant having to do my training, get it all done, and to be indoors by 3 p.m. It was a madness. It was a complete madness. I've obviously then flown over to Miami. I actually done like a podcast while I was out in Dominican Republic with someone, and I had no corner team, and I just got on well with this guy. Like we were just chatting. He's from Seattle. Shout out Tristan. He's from Mexico, my brother. And I just messaged him a few days later after the podcast and just said, look, mate, would you mind coming and do my corner? Like, and he was just like, it'd be an absolute honor. And he flew from Seattle to Miami to meet me about 3 days before the fight, and stayed in my hotel, looked after me like you wouldn't believe. Followed me into battle against Palomino.
Wow, man. And so that was at 155, right?
Yeah, for the, 155.
So the bare knuckle weights are the same as the MMA weights, or are they like boxing weights? I'm trying to... They're like similar, right?
I think... To be honest, we obviously coming from a professional boxing background, like the weights, the MMA weights and that are slightly different, aren't they? So yeah. I think it's lightweight I'm fighting at in BKFC, but as a boxer, this would be super welterweight.
That's right. Yeah. Boxing gets a little bit heavy, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so I think you guys are like fighting to similar MMA because you'll be lightweight in MMA too.
And then
featherweight would be 145.
Yeah, all right, okay.
So there you go. Yeah, bare knuckle has been like a little revolution, huh? Have you seen, you've been in bare knuckle since the very beginning. I feel like you're one of the ambassadors of the bare knuckle.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know if you know my story, as in, so I turned professional boxer at 18, 19. I think I was just 19 when I had my first fight. I won the I was champion of England. I fought for the WBC International. I was in some big fights. And I used to make 140 pounds as a boxer, which was very hard for me.
140 pounds. It's like 63K. Yeah.
It was horrendous. I mean, I walk around at 180 perhaps.
Oh wow.
So anyway, I've made that weight for about 4 or 5 times in my career. I won the English title. I should have just moved up a weight. I didn't. I fought for the WBC International. I had done mad stuff, as you know. You know, I'm sure you've done it yourself, making weight. And I actually went on a podcast and spoke about all the things that I was doing, using saunas, salt baths, and all this. I wasn't glamorizing it, but I was just sort of saying, look, you know, I box like a bag of shit, basically.
Yeah.
And the British Border Control banned me from boxing, took my license away.
I remember. I'm so glad we got into this. Yo, you, yeah. Man, what, bro? What? Just for. I always wonder sometimes, like when we talk on podcasts too, it's like, yeah, I'm always wondering, like, are we saying too much? Because the cutting weight stuff that fighters do is crazy, right?
Yeah.
So they didn't like that you kind of shine a light on a truth that
didn't like me
they've been doing
about.
For hundreds of years, though. And fighters die in boxing, bro.
Yeah.
So they didn't like that heat.
So I think what happened in between the time that I'd done the podcast and it actually come out, there was a guy called Scott Westgarth who actually died in an English title fight. And I think it was due to, obviously, weight cutting. And I think the British Border Control just basically used me as an example, really. Do you know what I mean? She can't be talking about stuff like that. Like I say, I wasn't glamorizing it, but
you know. Just talking about like the grind of cutting weight. Probably like, I'm 20 pounds over this week. I took a fight on short notice. Yeah. I was running for 3 days in the sauna suit. I passed out in the sauna. Like my boy had to take me out. Because I've seen, bro, you see crazy shit, man.
It's just like old war stories, basically. Yes. I mean, look, you know, everyone sees, you know, the finished product on fight night, but they don't see the horrible, horrible stuff that, you know, 99% of fighters go through to make weight for everything else, to be able to get in that ring. You know, so I just, like I say, just told it as a bit of an old war story. Next thing I know, I got a big package through the door with all like highlighting all the things that I said wrong and everything else. I rung the board up and just said, look, you know, what's this all about? And they just said, if you want to come and get your license back, you have to bring a lawyer in front of the board. And I just went, do you know what? I've been boxing, pro boxer for 7 years. I was known for being in like fight of the night on big shows, small shows. And I just thought, how disposable I am. Like, obviously, the British Border Control are obviously making money from sanctioning fees, you know, title fights that I'm on, TV fights and everything else, and just take my job away. At the time, I was 26. That was my job, professional fighter. To just take my license like that, you know, how disposable you are as a fighter, man.
We're like cattle to them.
Just, you know, it's a conveyor belt. They've got other people coming along. See you later. Make an example of him. I obviously wasn't making them enough money to worry about, I suppose.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to be like, it's like you got to be undeniable to the point where like they need you, but if not, then you're just disposable. That's like the game we're in, right?
You look at these fights. Like, I mean, especially in Britain right now. I mean, it's happening a lot. A lot of fighters are testing positive for steroids and everything else, and they're getting like 6 month bans. And they're like look at Canelo. He got caught with clenbuterol, didn't he? That time. And the WBC like sort of made him a bit of a out by saying the whole meat thing. Oh, it was in the meat he was eating it, and he got a 6 month ban. You're like, well, Canelo only fights every 6 months anyway. Like,
it's a 6 month ban, and he wasn't even going to fight in 6 months.
I say, it happens a lot, especially in Britain at the minute. There's a lot of fighters. I don't know if you know much about the whole Anthony Joshua, the Dillian Whyte fight that was supposed to happen last week.
So what happened?
Dillian Whyte tested positive a week before the fight for a banned substance. Conor Benn, there's a whole thing going on with him. So he's tested positive twice for a banned substance.
Yeah.
And they still reckon he's going to be cleared to fight. Of course he is, because he makes everyone too much money.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And then, so you think that boxing, is it hard? Like, how do they do the regulations and testing like that in boxing commissions? Like, do the fighters agree? Like, yo, let's use this testing thing. And then they're kind of like, yo, or like, you guys, like, stay away from certain bodies or something like that?
I mean, like, when I was a professional boxer, I only ever got tested on championship fights.
Okay.
You know, like the WBC and stuff like that. You had a guy there following you about on the night and all that kind of thing. But, you know, early on in your career, you weren't getting tested. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, there's probably a lot of people on all kinds of stuff early on in their career. It's not until you get to the level where you're on TV and you're fighting for big titles that they're testing. So, yeah, like I say, you know, I don't really get it. Especially at the level like, you know, Anthony Joshua, Dillian Whyte, like you must know that, you know, they got UCAD testing you and stuff like proper big. You must know you're getting tested. But I suppose, look, you know, it's every percent, isn't it? If you can get a 1%, 2% over your opponent at that level, that's what people are looking for. And it's a big difference, so.
No, for sure. Because I know from MMA, but I just don't know about boxing, like if it's too like prevalent, but I'm sure it's got to be. But I don't know if it's less or more regulated, because, you know, they got UFC, they have like USADA now or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah, USADA work with the boxing.
All right, so.
Yeah.
Like they had the big fight with Terrence. Do you see the Terrence Crawford?
Yeah.
Boy, what a fight, right?
I watched it again yesterday, actually.
Oh, what a good fight, right? I'm a big fan of Terrence, man. This guy is like a real class act too, you know? Like he used to be a wrestler and stuff, you know?
Yeah. I heard he was. Yeah. So, that's cool. Yeah.
That was a great fight. Yo, boxing is like, I feel like boxing is making big noise right now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've got sort of a bit, I'll be honest with you. Since I've got a bit of a bitter taste in my mouth from the boxing anyway. Okay. Do you know what I mean? But, I mean, I catch the big fights, but I would say I watch a lot more MMA now than I do boxing. I sort of fell out of love with boxing. I'm sure you know it yourself. Like I say, I was a pro 7-8 years, and being in the game, being around all the people, it's a bullshit game, man. It's a business, and it sort of, like I say, it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth. And actually, when you've been in the game for as long as you have, like, and you find out what it's really all about, I don't like watching it, because it just, like, the memories come flooding in of, you know, being messed about by managers, promoters. This is, like I say, it's a business. What is it? I heard the other day someone said to me, boxing is a sport. Boxing is a business made out to look like a sport. And it's, you know, it's true. It's true, man. You know, it's true.
The smoke and mirrors. But that life, bro, I think is everything like that? I think it's all like that at the end. Because if you talk to anybody from any industry, when they've had a rough run, they're like, oh, this fuck. So I'm thinking like, you know what
it's
I'm
when
saying?
It's when money, isn't it? It's just when money comes involved with it. But like even stupid things like, so, you know, about what, 4 weeks ago, my Instagram got deleted.
Oh, right? I was going to ask you about
that. I was on like 50K. That's the second
what
time.
What happened?
The second time I've been deleted, right? Second time I've been deleted. And so I've put up a post. I mean, I don't know how much I can say about
this. Well, we're not live, so we'll just fucking delete. I'll probably have to edit out, but sorry, we'll just talk. We talk freely, don't worry.
I was signed under Matchroom Boxing with Eddie Hearn. And like I said to you earlier, I fought for the English title. And then I got offered a big title fight at the £140, and I should have moved up anyway. I remember being in the office at Matchroom, and I was like, I need to move up. I'm killing myself at this weight. I can't do it anymore. Anyway, I was promised, look, even if you lose in this fight for the WBC, I'll sign you on a free fight deal worth this much money. Da, 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 da. I'm 22, 23 years old. I'm thinking, right, okay, I've made it. I'm going to be signed on a free fight deal. Even if I lose this fight, I'm going to be on good money, everything else. So I took the fight. I thought, I'll make this weight one more time. I posed for the contract and everything else. It wasn't the actual sheet of paper, but it was like, oh, we'll just pretend, you know, we're signing the contract like that. Went into the fight, lost the fight, never heard from Eddie Hearn again in my life. And I actually have the picture of us signing this fake contract. And I posted, look, it's a bit like PTSD. Like I say, with promoters and managers, when you've got people trying to fuck you over all the time, like you're constantly watching over your back and everything else. And I posted this picture about a month ago just saying, look, you know, about this fake contract, my story will be told. You know, I know, I'm one of many fighters that are being fucked. You know what I mean? But so I posted that picture. Boom, next thing I know, been deleted off Instagram. So, I mean...
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
The Matrix, bro. Baby. The Matrix is
that
in boxing.
Shit is real, dog.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
Bro, they got some power.
Yeah, so obviously I tagged Eddie Hearn, I tagged him and mentioned him in it, so he's seen it all, or there was comment, like, I've got 50k, I've got comments, Eddie Hearn's this, is that, and next thing I know, boom, I'm gone, my Instagram's gone, so.
That's the first one, or that's the last one?
That was the second one, so the first time I got deleted, to be honest, I probably should have got deleted.
Why do they delete it? Like, how many did you have the first time?
23k the first
Damn,
time.
Damn, so you get a big ass bump. Yeah. How do you get? So you get it from the 50k? You got it from bare knuckle. Like, how'd you get that big bump back?
Yeah,
quick,
just
huh?
from it come back fairly quick. Like I say, I've had two accounts deleted. It come back fairly quick, and you know, like at the end of the day, bare knuckle boxing is clickbait. I'll put a picture of my face up after a fight. I'm getting likes and I'm getting views.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's people love violence, blood. So it's
Oh man, that's awesome, bro. All right, no, not awesome, but all right. So the first deletion, what happened?
The first deletion. Right. So
let's get into it.
We're digging into a bit more of our story now. So. When was this? So 3 years ago, I was actually engaged to a porn star.
Okay.
So I was with a porn star, and obviously she was working, and she's a well-known porn star, works here in America, England, and
so you were like boxing. We were bare knuckle already too.
I was bare knuckle. Yeah. Damn. Yeah, yeah.
That's a power duo right there.
Do you know what? It worked because we were almost like a bad Disney couple.
That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's like the opposite of like coming home to.
And it was funny because back in England, so the promotion, the bare knuckle promotion, I was world champion at BKB back home in England, was shown on the porn channel. Right, so I had all the porn girls doing their walk-in entrances, all the cards and everything else. So I'm obviously chatting backstage with one of the girls and then, you know, sort of gone from there. So we were together a year. I mean, it was a bit of carnage, really. And like I say, it was like the bad Disney couple type thing. And I actually went into a little bit of porn myself because obviously... We were sort of like working together.
Yeah. Is it like OnlyFans style or like?
Yeah, OnlyFans and stuff like that.
There's some bread in there, right?
Yeah.
Some
money, serious money, man. Fuck. Like women, I mean, you got to be consistent with it. Like, but there's some serious money for women to be made. I mean, for guys, like there's a lot of gay guys pay money.
Oh, yeah.
Gay guys pay the money, mate. there's money to be made, but I wasn't obviously posting anything up too rude on my Instagram, but I was putting, let's say, suggestive pictures perhaps, and I got warned once or twice, and then boom.
And then they don't play around.
No.
Oh my gosh. And the second one, you're already like on probation already, so maybe when Eddie Hearn just called one guy, we've been waiting
to get rid of this guy's account.
This guy was already on our no-fly zones.
Yeah, man.
Wow, so that's how you started the bare knuckle journey, started through the craziness with the boxing. So I understand what the boxing thing is, sour taste in your mouth, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you what, that which is the fight that we saw that got a big robbery just recently, I got so pissed. Lomachenko.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Every time I see this guy fight, all I've been hearing, Lomachenko, right? I hear all this hype, Lomachenko for years, you know, all the MMA fighters are trying to do the Lomachenko footwork. But I never see him fight live. I just watch highlight reels, right?
Yeah, yeah.
First time I watched him fight live was like, I don't know, a while back when he fought Teofimo Lopez.
Yeah.
He lost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, damn, it's the first time I see this guy. Like, I actually sit down, had him going on the stream. He lost, but then I watched him fight again, and I thought he won the last fight against David Henney. And it was like, yo, that boxing shit, I got so mad, bro. It's just like, this is why people don't watch this shit. It's just so, like,
it's just like you were saying, bro.
You can see, like, with the 32 guys in the ring, they're all, you know, all those guys, everybody in there is making probably more money than the fighters, bro.
Yeah.
Imagine that. You know what I'm saying? All these fucking suits in there, all these bean counters, dog.
Well, let me tell you a story. Right? So I tell this story to everyone when we talk about boxing. Like I say, I was 23 years old. I fought for the English title. Against a guy called Ricky Boylan, who at the time was 12-0 in boxing, which is obviously very hard to do. He was Matchroom's golden boy. He was having like documentaries made about him on TV and everything else. So anyway, I've put my name forward. I said, look, I want to fight your golden boy. To be honest, I hounded him for days and days and days and days. So I was brought in as the away fighter. You know the situation when you're the B-side. The fight before Anthony Joshua. He was fighting for his first title. Packed out O2 Arena, about 15,000 people. So I've gone into that fight as the away fighter. And I swear to you, I boxed this guy's head off. Right? Anyway, it's come to the decision, like, on one card, it's a draw. And I just turned around at my trainer and said, they're going to fuck me. Luckily, it was so clearly that I'd won. The other two judges have gone for me and I won it on a split decision. But when they first said that first draw, I was like, they're going to fuck me. You know, I'm the away fighter. They're going to fuck me.
Do you know
what I mean? But that fight, like I say, co-main event, it was on primetime TV. I'm fighting a guy who's 12-0 for a big title, and I made £4,500. That's about just over $5,000. And I've trained 10 weeks for that. I'm on TV. I'm on everything else. And people are thinking I'm on big money because I'm on TV.
They have no idea.
And I'm just like, I've just made $5,000, and that's before my manager takes his bit, my cut man takes his bit, my other people take their bit. I'm probably walking away with like, what, $3,000 in 10 weeks of training for a 10-round title fight against a 12-0 guy. That's boxing, man.
The undercards are terrible, right?
Like, just... Do you know what it is with boxing? It's like everyone sees the Canelos, the Mayweathers earning 70, 80 million, but there's no in-between. I know people who have had to pay, you know, the ticket scenario. You know, if you don't sell tickets, you're not worth anything to a promoter. I've known fighters have to pay out of their own pocket because they've not sold enough tickets to fight. Do you know what I mean? They're not making any money. They're paying out of their own pocket to fight.
Or they give away tickets and have to pay for
those. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, it's a business. Like we said, it's a business.
Sometimes the fight costs you money if you think about it, right? If you get injured or something like that, what if you get injured and you're out for like 2 months, you know, and then how are you going to make money in between?
I was fighting a guy called Johnny Garton who was the British champion. I trained for about 10 weeks for that fight and I've actually got a daughter and my daughter was being born a month later, so I needed this money, do you know what I mean? And I broke my hand about 10 days out from the fight. So obviously, you can't fight, you don't earn money, I can't work because I broke my hand. So actually, I've just spent 10 weeks spending money on training camps and everything else to not get paid because I broke my hand and not be able to work either. So I'd come out of that like bad. And that's the reality for most fighters.
Yeah, you get hurt and then you get hurt and you don't get paid for the training camp or for the month's training. Yeah, you know, you got to show up. Mm-hmm. I busted my ankle I remember I cracked my ankle like the last wrestling session of the camp. I was like fully prepared, ready to go. Popped my ankle. I'm on crutches now for a month. You know what I'm saying? I could barely even teach, you know, like I'm trying to, and I teach jiu-jitsu. So it was like, and then you just lose that cash. You're just like, yo, it's very disheartening, man. Like a lot of the battle, right, in this game is just, I know so many guys. How many guys, you know, that like, they never really got their career popped off. They're a little bit older because it's just injuries, you know? Oh man, so you broke your hand, like what, sparring? You think you broke your hand or something?
Yeah, I was sparring and it was funny, I had 16-ounce gloves on, guy had a head guard on, and I threw an overhand right, and I hit him like sort of like on the forehead, and I got a spiral fracture in my hand. I mean, I've had operations on my hands and that previously, but yeah, it was a spiral. They actually call it a boxer's fracture because the only way you can break it is by punching something.
I've had that one before. Yeah, before I knew how to train.
Yeah, so it was frustrating.
Oh my god! Yeah, man. Do you train? How do you feel like boxing compared to bare knuckle? That's good that I have you for like all those boxing fights and now having all these bare knuckle fights. Yeah. The impact, is it worse? Do you think the impact with the big gloves is more like, you think bare knuckle is more cutting and like dangerous on visuals, but boxing is more brutal, or do you think vice versa?
Yeah.
I have a theory on that with
again,
the big gloves.
Yeah, again, I tell people all the time, boxing's way more dangerous than bare knuckle. 10, 12, 3 minute rounds of non-stop getting, you know, hit around the head, and you know, you look at the people who get brain injuries, die in the sport, you know, it's often, more often than not, it's the long distance fights, again, where they've dehydrated themselves as well. The long distance fights, the, you know, the prolonged punishment, people get bleeds on the brain and everything else. I mean, yeah, okay, bare knuckle facially, the damage is obviously a lot worse, but you're just not taking them punches like you do with a glove. You can't even hit as hard with a glove. Like, you know, when you've got a glove on, you can really put some power behind it, especially when you're, you know, in professional boxing, you've almost got a cast underneath that as well. So you can really whack, you know, so, and obviously 5 2-minute rounds as well, bare knuckle. Sure, so it's very quick, you know, facially. And don't get me wrong, I'll come out of fights and people will be like, wow, you know, my face will be fucked up. But, yeah, you know, you come out of a 10, 12, 3 minute round boxing match, you don't know the damage that's been.
Yes. Yeah, you're probably taking weight. I always had that same theory. They even say that with MMA, you know, like that. MMA, there's like the knockouts are more sporadic and stuff like that, but you're not taking. And the standing eights, too, with boxing, you can get dropped a couple times in a fight. So then that's just multiple, you know, and then who knows the fights that rock the. Because you don't have to, your butt doesn't have to hit the ground to be a concussion, right?
No, if it's
a flash, you know, like, right? Is that like, I don't know what can cause a concussion or not, but.
Well, like you think when you're on the ropes in a boxing match, you take one, you take another one, you take another one, you take another one. It's, you know, you can take a combination of about 5 or 6 shots, be knocked out on the second shot, but take 3, 4 more that you really don't need to take. I mean, I know it happens, especially in UFC, and that when they're knocked out on the floor and they'll jump on top of them.
Yeah, the ground and pound.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just, you know, with boxing, it's that prolonged punishment, isn't it? Just getting rattled around the head for 10, 12 rounds.
Yeah, man. And the sparring and boxing sparring is very brutal, right? Mm-hmm. You're from a boxing gym. You grew up in boxing gyms coming up as a kid, right?
So
it's rough, huh?
Oh, man. It's different. I mean, it's really made me who I am today. Like, I started going down to my pro gym, pro boxing gym, when I was like 16. And I could always grow a little bit of a beard and everything else. And I think they thought I was a lot older than I was. And I remember going down there and sparring, like, I sparred some good fighters, man. People who went on to do big things. And I got smashed to bits. Like, them first couple of years as a pro, really, or going down to the pro gym, you know, I got taught some lessons, man. I really took some beatings. And I think that's half the reason why they probably liked me so much, because there was a few times that they probably laughed when I left, like, that little kid's just got his ass kicked. And I'll be back the next day. Do you know what I mean? I think they respected that. And it's definitely made me who I am today. Like I say, there were no punches being pulled early on in my career. I was really, I really got levered a few times.
Especially and then did you have a coach coming up and shit like this, or like, did we kind of like,
So to be honest, like, my trainer now, like, you look him up, Tony Sims, back in England, he's probably one of the, well, I mean, Anthony Joshua, Darren Barker, John Ryder, Kevin Mitchell, Ricky Burt, like, all world champions. He's a massive trainer. And I sort of feel like where I was so young and I was in a, don't get me wrong, I'm very grateful for being in that gym, but I was used as a bit of a sparring partner for the world champions, do you know what I mean, and stuff like that. And like I say, by the time I was like 22, 23, the wars I've been in sparring, wars, with, like I say, world champions. We used to spar, I remember a guy, Ricky Burns, world lightweight champion, fought Terence Crawford, went 12 rounds with him, great fighter, And before my English title fight, I was sparring 12 4-minute rounds with 30 seconds rest with him.
4-minute rounds?
4-minute rounds.
An extra minute on top to be like more ready.
And
getting him ready for a big fight.
And getting him ready for his world title fight. And the thing is, like, what was happening, you know, I was feeling amazing and I was sparring amazing. But where I was used as a bit of a sparring partner, it like, right, I got him ready for his fight. And then my fight would be a month afterwards. By the time my fight come around, I'd had the fight knocked out of me, man. I'd been in so many gym wars. I got to the fight and there were times I was like, wow, I'm tired.
You don't want to, you left the fight in the gym.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, you hear about it all the time, particularly in these big, big gyms, like the young lads do get used as a sparring partner. And looking back on it, I mean, although now I can look back on it with some fond memories and stuff like that, I was definitely used as a sparring partner.
Yeah, that's a good point that you make. That's actually something that's like, you gotta like kind of, that's actually a good topic to talk, that's a good subject to talk on the podcast for like younger fighters who listen, because sometimes you can get lost in the sauce and it's not, you just gotta understand the game, right? And you can't, like you're saying with the, like, you just can't, you can, in big gyms, guys are gonna need like amateurs and like up and comers to help them prepare for sure. Cause you know, like, and I realize this too, you can't just train with guys like your level, that's how you're gonna get fucking hurt. You know what I'm saying? Or sometimes it's not good for your confidence before a fight, you know? Like, you need to have all levels, right? You need to get the guys you can work on, the guys you get your defense on. But young fighters, they do get like, sometimes you could think you're like, you're a part of something that's going on like big, but you don't really realize you're just a punching bag, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And you are getting good work in, but then you gotta be careful that you're not, sometimes getting tough is not getting better.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, at the time I was very naive. Like I say, I was like 21, 22, 23. And I was like, wow, I've got the chance to spar a world champion. I should be massively grateful. Do you know what I mean? But when you're getting used 3 times a week for 8 weeks, it definitely catches up, you know, with you, man.
Yeah, it's so important. That's why it's so good. Like, they're saying that the MMA is like, they're doing like a lot of group training. Boxing is very like solo dolo, right? Mm. You notice that like guys kind of get like their coach and they can kind of like travel to gyms, look for partners, and they do like their working and stuff like that. Mm. Where MMA is like right now is like still like very team oriented, but I think MMA is going to start getting more and more towards that too, where like you'll have a champion or a fighter. He'll have like a couple of guys that he uses for all his things. But then like the super gyms, I don't know how much longer those were. Everybody just training together in a big room, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I say, I'm very grateful of where I was and everything else. But you know, now the gym I'm at here in Miami, it's nice because it's sort of gone full circle a bit now. You know, at the age I'm at and how long I've been doing it, I'm now giving advice to the youngsters coming up in the gyms and that. And you know, I'm with a trainer now as well who, I mean, we spar like once, twice a week, but he doesn't want it to be all out war. And to be honest, for a long time, that's all I knew in sparring.
Yes,
it's all I knew. Like when people, you know, I think people probably now, like I probably spar a little bit hard at times, but that's just because that's how it was. Do you know what I mean? It's not me being a douchebag or nothing like that and trying to take liberties. That's just how it was. You know, I always used to hard sparring. But it's
it comes not, with a cost. I think in the beginning you need it. I think in the beginning you need it.
You need it. But there's definitely now, like, I'm going into fights now so much fresher because of not all the heavy sparring.
There's a fine line, because I feel like in your first year or two, sometimes you kind of need that blindness and just kind of like gain that toughness. And you got to know like you can dig deep and put it in you, especially when you're less technical. But obviously, especially the older you get, like the closer you get to a fight, you know, you just want to be properly coached and stuff. Man, so you're training at Tigres right now, right? That's a great gym, bro. That's a classic gym, man. Tigres, I've trained at Tigres in his old spot when he used to be in another spot in Kendall area, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
So that's great, man. How do you like training over there and how's it been helping your – do you feel like a Cuban-style boxing kind of compared to your English style that you had before?
So I come over here about a year ago to do my first training camp, and to be honest, like coming from, like I say, the like traditional British boxing, like, you know, my head movement's very good and I come forward and everything else. Coming over here, obviously the Cubans, their footwork is, I mean, it's top notch. Like, that's why they're always winning the Olympics and everything else. You know, their footwork is amazing. Even the heavyweights, they're so light on their feet. So now I'm obviously learning all the footwork, which is, you know, like I say, quite different from what I'm used to. But at the same time, I love it because you know, I'm 22 years deep into a career and I'm still learning new things. So it's cool. But yeah, it's difficult. Like watching Luis Palomino, like, and understanding that 10 years ago, he was a brawler, wanted to have a war with everyone, like fighting with his heart, you know, and everything else. And then to look at him now, like his footwork, how clever he is in a fight. And that's come from being with Tigre. Do you know what I mean? That's I love Tigre, man. I think he's such a good coach. I mean, it's funny because obviously I'm from England. There's a little bit of a language barrier.
Oh my God. That's going to be hilarious. Yeah. Wait a minute, but didn't yeah, jab. He's, you know, he's, like, and he's all out. He's yeah, all passion. Yeah, heart, you know?
So much passion.
This
man.
Guy is like, yeah, he's energy, man. Yeah, he's
but
good.
I just like, I totally get everything he shows me and that. And I just have a really, really good relationship. And also I feel that like when I'm fighting, like I say, the passion. He wants you to win so much.
Yes.
And that to me, for a trainer, that means more than anything. Because like I'm in there, I want to win for you. I want to win for me and you. We're a team. Like I'm winning for both of us. Do you know what I mean? And when I'm in there like that, I'm indestructible.
I feel you. How important is that for to have a coach like that? Right? There's nothing. For me, I feel like you want to have a guy in there that like you will die for.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, it makes a tremendous difference, bro. It does. At least for me. Yeah. Some guys are soldiers. I know some guys, they can just go alone and they're going to fight the same. But when I have somebody in there that like, when you really don't want to disappoint them, like a father figure almost.
Yeah.
You know what
exactly,
I'm saying?
Yeah. I had it, like, in the pro boxing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've really found that with Tigre. I just like the passion. It really, you know, when I go and train with him, I want to train hard for him. And yeah, so I know I found the right coach.
Yeah.
Because I feel that motivation, that inspiration every time I'm with him in the gym. I feel that. So I know I've got the right coach.
No, and listen, bro, you said you've had like a long career, right? Bro, you started when you were young, but like we were talking about it before the podcast, right? What the good is now, we're both in our 30s, but when you get into your 30s now, you have all the experience from the 20s. Mm-hmm. But yo, 30 is like the new 20, bro. Mm-hmm. Look at Terrence Crawford. Look at all the champions right now. Israel Adesanya, Alex Volkanovski. They're all like in their mid-30s right now. 33 to like 35, 36.
Well, the thing is, you look at Terrence Crawford, like I said to you, I watched that fight yesterday. And like, man, just amazing shot selection. And that doesn't come from... That comes from experience. That doesn't come from being like, you know, 20, 21, 22, 23. That comes from his whole career. He's got that shot selection to the point he's 35 now. And that experience and that shot selection and everything else, like, you can't compete with that. Do you know what I mean? That experience has got him to that level. You know, like I say, I had the youthfulness and everything else when I was like 22, 23. But man, was I naive. Like, I really, really wish, and I'm going to be going back to boxing, doing some glove boxing while I'm out here in Miami.
Nice.
And I feel like at this age, compared to when I was 23, like, it's just night and day. It's just confidence, experience, just everything. I'm a man now.
Yes.
I was a kid then. And people who haven't done combat sport perhaps won't understand that, but there's a big difference from being a kid against a 30-year-old man who's been in the game a long time.
Mentality.
Yeah, the mentality is totally different.
You can't explain
it. Yeah, you just can't. Like, you've been there, you've done it. Like, when you're a kid, that doubt's still in the back of your head. When you're in them big fights, you haven't been there before, and you're like, shit, I haven't been here. But like, man, I'm tried and tested so many times now. When I walk to the ring, I'm like, I'm about this. I know I'm about this.
Especially now with the experience too. You get a younger guy, you're like, listen, motherfucker, listen, bro. When you were 13, when you were still sucking, when you were still watching Power Rangers, I was out here fighting the best in the world, getting after it. So that's just going to...
No, if someone offers me a 22-year-old now, I'm thinking, I'm going to old man you. I'm going to beat you down. Like, I'm going to teach you a thing or two. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, that's how it feels.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. And I feel like that's what's so cool about fighting, man. Like, if your brain is still in it, right? Your heart has to be in it, right? That's number one. Once your heart is out, you got to get out because it gets dangerous. But as long as your heart, like the spirit, like the fighting spirit, they have that a lot in anime, like in Ippo and stuff. If your fighting spirit is still strong, man, like you can always get better and learning. And then that experience it's the number one thing. That's why you love, like, there's so many, like Matt Brown. You ever seen like UFC fight, like old school guys when they just put it on these guys? So that experience is invaluable, man.
Yeah. Completely.
For sure, bro. Right? Do you feel like the boxing man, bare knuckle is such a new sport, right? So you get like guys that are bare knuckle fighters that they just start bare knuckle, right?
I got you. Mm. Cheers.
You got guys that are just bare knuckle, right? Mm. You got guys MMA transitioning to bare knuckle.
Yeah.
And then you got boxers doing bare knuckle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think that boxers have a little bit of the, or is there something in the MMA guys that have this tenacity?
Yeah. I had this conversation with someone the other day. I actually think the MMA guys are doing better.
Okay.
Because of the clinch. And look, a lot of people are going to hate me for saying this. They're going to hate me for saying
this. That's good.
But some boxers are pussies, man. They're pussies. Like, MMA guys are rougher, tougher. Some boxers are pussies. Like
prima donna?
Yeah. Like, you know, they've got these big gloves on. You take them gloves off. They're not used to getting cut. Then, you know, with boxing, the guys that I particularly struggled with in boxing, I would annihilate in bare knuckle because they were the flick jab. Run, 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 run away, run away, run away. You can't do that in bare knuckle. Like, at some point, you're going to get hit on the chin bare knuckle and then we're going to see what you're really about. You know what I mean? Yeah, a lot of people aren't going to like that. But I've been around boxing all my life, like I say, and you've got them people like myself who will fight anyone, anytime, anywhere. But you've got some pussies in boxing as well.
I got you. You got the pretty box. It's like the beautiful the sport, the boxes. Sweet science.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the sweet science only goes so far in bare knuckle because bare knuckle is like a sweet war.
and again, you'll know all about it. You got the bully fighters. When they're on top, everything's sweet, but when they've got facing a bit of adversity, and you see it, you do see it a lot, particularly in BKFC, the pro boxers coming over here and they're taking jabs and they're going down on one knee like, nah, I'm all right. Like, it's a different ball game getting hit with a glove and hit with a bare knuckle.
The impact is different, right?
The best way to explain it, because like pretty much, like for me particularly, like for every punch you're taking, you're pretty much getting cut and it's like a burn. Like a burn. And a lot of boxers aren't used to seeing their own blood. Do you know what I mean? They get freaked out. Like, whereas with me, I'm quite lucky. I bled quite a lot as a boxer, so I'm used to it. But fighters panic, man. When they see their own blood and they're cut and everything, they panic. And it's the calmness in the chaos. That's what I tell people. Like, bare knuckle is about having that calmness in the chaos. And I think Luis Palomino, he's the ultimate bare knuckle fighter because he's got the calmness in the chaos. I'm not quite there yet. I like having a fight too much and that costs me with getting cut and everything else. But once you've got that calmness in the chaos nailed down like Palomino has, where he can box, move, do what he has to do to win, it's a different ballgame.
I was talking to somebody about that the other day. We were saying like, Baboon was kind of like born for bare knuckle because he was like, you said, in his MMA career, he was like a crazy, you know what's crazy is in bare knuckle, his best weapon is kick, bro. He has that low kick. He has the low kick of death that he used to kill people with for years, you know? And they don't even know, he can't even do that in bare knuckle. But yeah, now he's like super more technical than he was in MMA, right?
His footwork's just like I say, like, because I'm with his coach and I'm learning all what he's doing and I'm sort of doing it and I'm not quite there yet. And then I see him doing it, I'm like, it's effortless. Do you know what I mean? His footwork is, and it's tough. Like, it's very tough. Like, coming from the background I've had. I've just ultimate respect, man, because, you know, it's a hard thing to learn.
The footwork and everything, and angles.
Yeah, footwork, just, yeah.
It's one thing to, like, fight and go forward, but it's another thing to fight, go forward, and think, just, and move, and...
I think, like, the biggest thing for me, and I don't know if I'm ever going to get over it. I mean, I hope that, like, I have really good chats with Palomino, and he's, you know, he gives me a lot of advice, because, like I say, you know, 10 years ago, he was the fighter that I am, that, you know, I like to get stuck in, have a war and everything else. And it's just like, look, you know, you've got to do what you got to do to win. And probably my weakness is mine is that I like to entertain the fans too much. And at the end of the day, that doesn't always win fights.
No, I know I have it, yeah.
You know, and I like being a crowd pleaser. But again, that doesn't always win you fights. And that doesn't win you belts. So, you know, I need to take that on board and you know, see how he's turned his career around.
Yeah, so that could be one of the things that's about being in Miami, right? Being moving here now, this is one of the things you can add on to your game in Arsenal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you started Bare Knuckle, what was the name of the show? And was England? Where do you think Bare Knuckle is big right now? Because it's like, I feel like it's been like a big takeover all over, but it's compared to England and America, like, where do you think it's bigger right now?
I would say it's getting bigger. It's exploded over here in America. It was big back in the UK. Without trying to blow too much smoke up my own ass.
Nah, get in there, bro.
I saw, like, I had three fights, bare knuckle fights, in BKB back in the UK, and they all got a fight of the night, and I fought a guy in my third fight who was the world champion, Sean George, who has had like 22 bare knuckle fights. He's a legend. I mean, hard guy, and I beat him in my third fight. So there was a lot of hype around me, and then obviously I've been signed to come over here to America. America's just a much bigger place, yeah, in general, and I feel like especially here in Florida, they love their fighters here, man. Yeah. They love their fighters. Like here in Miami, like I get so much love, man. I'm walking around places.
Really?
Yeah, I got so much love. I'll go back home to my hometown of Ely, Cambridgeshire. No one will say nothing to me. I walk down South Beach, I'm on Muscle Beach. People come up to me for photos and I'm like, wow. So BKFC is really getting big. I went to an amateur kickboxing show last week. Everyone was coming up to me for pictures and that. So it's definitely getting a lot of exposure.
Yeah, the Hard Rock fights, they go crazy, right? That place goes mad for the fight, for the bare knuckle fights at the Hard Rock. And the walkout, the presentation, it's a new phenomenon. I ain't gonna lie, I kind of love it. Like, I'm so intrigued by it. That's why I love talking to you guys on the podcast, you know, because I'm always intrigued by the bare knuckle fighter stories, you know?
Yeah.
It's something just raw about it, yo. Yeah. It's great. It's wild, man.
Would
I love
you
it.
Try it?
I don't know, dog. I don't know. I'll maybe do bare knuckle MMA.
Yeah, bare knuckle MMA.
Because that would be more my field. You know what I'm saying? I told myself, like, even if I fight again, I was like, I'm going to stop striking, bro. I need to go back to my grappling roots.
Yeah.
You know, but honestly, listen, you know, it's funny, bro. The only problem that would be with bare knuckle or the scar I got on my head, bro, I got, same shit that happened to you, bro. I got jumped. I got bottled. And I got like 38 stitches in my head. They almost killed me, bro, in Thailand. Just in the pandemic. In January, I got jumped by like an Australian biker gang, bro. It was crazy rumble. Same thing. I was like at an after, out at night. You know what I'm saying? And I tried to break up a fight.
Yeah.
And these hooligans jumped me, bro. Like these 10 Aussie guys, all jacked, like 200 pounders. Yeah, yeah, you know, they started punching me from everywhere. And then I remember like, I'm trying to like, they have my hands, like they kind of like got me grabbed here and I'm like trying to fucking break through and I'm feeling all the punches and you know, all the punches feel normal, like it's like regular fists, like pop, 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 you know, and you can hear it. Yeah, and then one of them was like, something sounded real different. You know what I'm saying? And they broke the bottle, and it was like a big one, a quart bottle, you know, they broke the bottle and he stabbed me in the head, bro. So then I'm like, fuck, and I feel my face. And then as soon as I already knew right away what happened, you know. But I was just trying not to get knocked out when they jumped me. You feel me? Because I was like, I had a friend who got stomped out in high school, and he was like in a wheelchair. He was like kind of like,
yeah, if you were on the floor, they're gonna,
and then they'll just stomp you out, you know. So I was just trying to stay awake and like catch all the punches. Yeah. Thank God. But yeah, same thing. So that's the only thing that kind of freaks me out now. Like, oh, bro, a couple bare knuckles on this, that shit might open. That would be crazy ass scar. 36. You know what I'm saying? So it's gonna be hard to hide.
Yeah.
I did fight MMA when it was like in the like pretty fresh with it.
Yeah.
And nothing happened, but fuck, I don't know. I did get elbowed, and fuck, my chin is you said you have a numbness in your gum. I had the same thing, bro. I got hit once, and then like my teeth on this top, the top part of my gums, I can't feel. So that's normal, huh?
Yeah.
Fighters get that shit. It's never gonna come back.
Like, yeah, like the doctor said to me, they were like, you might get the feeling back, you might not, and I've not got it back. I mean, I've had four fights since I broke my jaw, so it probably doesn't help the fact that I'm still getting punched on it. It's not really healing, but
yeah. Oh my god, you broke. So do you feel like your jaw got do you feel like it's stronger with the since you got it broke?
Yeah,
my boy Shay Walsh broke his jaw, but he said it when he came back it was fucking strong.
Yeah,
but then he broke it again.
Yeah, I mean, I've got plates here, so I mean, hell yeah, should be. But I mean more than anything, it just adds to, like, I don't fear fuck all now. Like, that was a horrible situation to go through. But I've gone through it, and it just adds to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it builds character.
Yeah,
exactly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think of that picture. Have you seen the picture of the lion? You know what I'm saying? He's got all those scars and shit. You know what I mean? It's like, that's a lion with some experience.
It's a story to tell, man. We've been there and we've done it. Yeah, it's a story to tell. And that's what life's all about for me. I want to leave a legacy behind, you know. And I think my legacy is not being the best fighter in the world, but it's been the most determined fighter in the world. I've been through, like, I've been banned from boxing. I've had all that nightmare with promoters. I've had so many opportunities to quit fighting, and I haven't. I've stuck in there. And event, like, you know, I went out to Miami, fought Palomino, and then I got rewarded with a work visa to come out here and do the job I love in Miami. Like, that's my reward, you know. I had my path, I stuck on my path, and that's what I want to be remembered for, you know. I'm not the most skillful fighter in the world, but you will fail to find someone more determined than me.
That's amazing. No, 100%. And it's like, listen, yeah, there's only going to be a small percentage of people that are going to make that elite level. But in the process of going for it, how much do you learn about yourself going for it? You know what I mean? Just getting after it, you know, like it makes you so much. I feel like it levels you up just as a human. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where, like, I'm in the same boat, bro. I didn't do a lot of the things that I wanted to accomplish. You know, I wanted to get to the UFC. You know what I mean? I wanted to win the world title. I wanted to be the bantamweight champ. I had all these visions, and yeah, I fell super short. But in the process of falling short, like, I found so many other great things, and I learned so much about myself. Yeah. So it's like,
I mean, a lot of the fight game as well, it's, you know, circumstance. There's so much luck involved.
Oh my gosh! Right?
Like, and I don't like saying that, like, but there is. There's so much luck. If your face fits, injuries, like I say, you know, staying active. There's so many different things that can affect a fighter's career, and, you know, if you just, like with me, like, I had my license taken away. I've had injuries. I've had two, like, bad operations. I've had shoulder operation, wrist operations. I broke my jaw, but I've never let it stop me. Like, and you know, if you can't get inspired or motivated from my story, you're just a hater. That's what I say to people.
Because hell,
if
yeah.
I love Mike Bisping. Oh my God, Mike Bisping,
my favorite.
What a guy! Like. What a guy. Like, if you cannot get inspired and motivated from a person like that, there's something wrong with you, man.
He's the best. You know, when he first, you know, when I loved him the most is when he got knocked out by Dan Henderson. Yeah. And he came back and he didn't give a fuck.
No, he didn't.
He didn't give a fuck. He never got the memo.
I love it.
And before I met English people, I didn't understand the English banter.
Yeah.
So when I used to watch Ultimate Fighter, I used to hate him, bro, against Dan Henderson. I just didn't understand the banter too.
Yeah,
you know, like,
yeah,
and then when I moved to Thailand, and all my friends are English and Australian now, so yeah. I kind of get it.
Just take the piss all the
just
time.
That's all it is. Like, yeah. Yo, they don't love you if they're not taking the piss, you know? I even know how to talk like you guys, dog. I talk more like that, you know?
Yeah, definitely. But,
bro, Michael Bisping, when he came back and he fought Dennis Kong after getting knocked out by Henderson, he came out with the same energy, like, screaming at the camera.
Yeah.
And ever since then, he just won me over. He came back, beat the shit out of Dennis Kong. Bro, lost every big fight after that that was going to get him to the title. Fought Chael Sonnen, lost. Crazy decision, you know, lost. Got his eye knocked out by Vitor Belfort with a spinning wheel kick, the crazy Vitor Belfort, the unstoppable Vitor 2.0, dog. Nobody was gonna beat that guy.
Nah.
And he came back and won the title on 2 weeks' notice. Dog, he came off a movie set. He said he was drinking beer and eating fried chicken, got off the set and went out there and got the job done because it was like a culmination of his life's work, I feel like, when he won that title. Like, it didn't matter that it was a 2 week camp. He'd been training his whole life for that moment, you know?
Yeah, I've watched it a few times, but his documentary, and like he said about after the Dan Henderson fight, because that was a horrible knockout, wasn't it? And his dad was chatting us on this documentary, and he just said, you know, he got back home, and Mike Bisping was like, right, it's done now, I can't change it, you know, what will be, let's get back to it. And, like, to have that strength, mental strength, it's just like, you know, I totally respect that because, you know, obviously I've lost fights and it kills you for weeks, and let alone a bad knockout like that, which is just getting watched by everyone, like, and still is being watched by everyone, to be able to just go, do you know what? It's done now. Let's move on. Wow. Incredible mental strength.
And then he fought his ass off. And then the number one contender fights he lost after that. Like, he had, like, he'll be, like, on a 3-fight winning streak, you know?
Yeah.
Had this huge fight. Boom. It's like, oh, my gosh, bro. But he just kept chipping away. Yeah. Kept chipping away, you know? One of my favorite fighters of all time, I would say. 100%. Mm-hmm. I was gutted when he fought GSP.
Yeah.
Because I love GSP, too. But Bisping, just his personality too. His personality's and he's just so gangster with it. Like, I remember when he fought, he always was hilarious. Like, I remember when he fought Luke, before he was going to fight Luke Rockhold the first time. He's like, listen, I sparred Luke Rockhold like 5 years ago. Let's just say I'm the uncrowned Strikeforce champion, you know? So he's always had good banter, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Oh, man. So England now. So how long you been in Miami 100%, like living here full time? Like
I've been here for about 7 months now.
Oh, not too much, bro. Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
How you like in Miami, like, bro? This is a dope ass city, right? Tell me the city isn't the shit.
I love it. I never ever want to go. Well, I never want to go back to England. Nice. I just, like I say, it's the opportunity. Obviously, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
The weather's beautiful. But for me, it's the opportunities. You know, it's the connections. It's the people you're meeting on a daily basis. You know, it's the fighters you're getting to work with. Like I say, I'm living the dream, man. I'm out here. You know, I'm not bothered about being a rich man. If I get to live my life like this, you know, and get to do what I want to do, I've just got a little job. A new gym on Miami Beach. So I'm coaching people, and I love that.
What's the name of the gym?
So it's actually going through a transition at the minute. It's been open about 3 weeks. So it's West Avenue Boxing at the minute, but they're actually looking to change the name. So, I've been doing classes there, one-on-ones there. You know, at the end of the day, for us fighters, we need an exit strategy as well. And I feel like the most important thing for fighters, I mean, there's a big mental health thing on fighters. Because I don't know if you're anything like me, but after a fight, you're like, what happens next?
Me and Steve talked about this.
Yeah. What happens next? And you just feel like your purpose, you feel a bit lost. So to have something else out here has really, really made me happy. Like, it's really made me feel settled, feel like I'm, you know, I should be here because I've got something else. I haven't just got the fighting and then I'm just sitting around.
That's tough. That's very important, bro. It's so important to have other things besides just fighting. You know what I'm saying? 100%. Yeah. And an exit strategy, which is big for fighters, bro. And you got guys that are just like, yo, I'm just going to fight. And, you know, that's what I do. And it's like, I know, bro. But you know what I mean? Like, being able to – coaching is great. I feel like coaching is the best. It's very selfless work. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But, it's a good out for us.
You've got to love it. And I think I've like drawn a little bit of like inspiration and that from being around Tigre, because like if someone was to say to Tigre tomorrow, you've got to fight, he'd fight. That guy is like, we said earlier, so passionate. He's always training. He just loves the sport so much. And you can see that, you know, the passion is coming out when he's training other people. And you know, I'm taking that. I'm like, I love this sport. I love this sport. I love to be able to give to other people, you know, my knowledge and everything else. So that's definitely my exit strategy from fighting. Staying in the game still. I feel like fighters who just completely try and walk away from the game, they're the ones that really struggle, because let's face it, the highs and the lows, and we're not normal people, man. We don't go through normal stuff. Like we said before earlier, we went through all that COVID stuff, having to quarantine, all to get in the ring and fight. We're not normal people. So just going to get in a 9-to-5 job where, you know, on a building site, or, you know, with all due respect to people who do that, we would struggle, really struggle.
People think I'm crazy, or people think we're crazy, right? You talk to a normal person, like, you fight, you get in a ring, you're crazy. And I'm like, you go to an office and work till 5 p.m. That's crazy. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. So it's like life is about perspective, dog. Perspective. You know what I mean? Because I'm just like, it's just different. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Different sides of the apple, I guess, right?
It's having that. I don't know if you can call it fear. Like, I need a little bit of fear in my life, a little bit of, it makes you feel alive, doesn't it?
Yeah, you need somebody who wants to fuck you, like, kick your ass in the week. Like, you know, you wake up in the morning knowing somebody wants to kick your ass or something different,
like,
you know?
People are like, oh, I don't know how you train 2 or 3 times a day. I'm like, right, in like 8 weeks, I'm going to get in the ring in front of thousands of people and I could get my ass kicked. That's motivation enough. That gets me out of bed in the morning. You don't need any more than that, trust me.
No, there's somebody who his, the best day, like, the best thing that would happen is he wants to see you, like, he wants to be on top of your dead body dancing, you know? Yeah. There's a guy who's training for that moment, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like, Yeah, well, the mental health thing. I call it like idle hands the devil's playground. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's the thing with fighting, especially like after a fight.
Yeah.
Steve was talking about it, that post-fighter depression. You know, like when you get that, I think you know what it is, like we're dull almost, you know, from the even the bonds you get, like the friendships you get through training is so much stronger, you know, than the regular friendships. Mm-hmm. So something about like breaking the sweat together.
It's like family, man. Like when I know, you know, if I have a down day out here now, I know to go to Young Tigers, to the gym, and be around all my fight family, because it does. It's positivity breeds positivity. Yep. Do you know what I mean? And just being around them people who are all striving for that same goal. And it really rubs off on each other. And it makes me, I walk out of that gym with a smile on my face, like, yeah, I needed that.
No, 100%, man.
Yeah.
And then the winning, the thrill of a win is so, it's so, like you were saying, it's so hard to replicate. So it's like, what's next? You know, like that feeling when they, you know, like the locker room feeling backstage.
You just like, for the 3, 4, 5, 6 days after a fight, you're on a bit of cloud nine, and then you know what goes up has to come back down, doesn't it? And after like I don't know week 10 days, you're like, right, what's next? And it's such a weird feeling to explain to someone, but it's almost like where's you know that void, like oh what you know what's next? What do I do now? So it's extremely important, to find something that I have the passion, because fighting's not good. I'm not wanting to fight until I'm 80.
Exactly. You don't want to, you know?
No.
If you could, I mean, I wouldn't be bad. In 80, you could be like the oldest fighter ever, you know? Now you're hitting new marks, you know what I'm saying? But hopefully it's not by choice. I mean, oh my gosh. That's the only thing with bare knuckle. So I wonder, how long has it been around for, you think, like, since the new revolution has...
It's been like 5 years now.
5 years now,
so
right?
I think, like, you know, no one really knows, because we're all coming from like a combat sport background, like me, professional boxing, you know, MMA, professional MMA, Muay Thai, kickboxing. You know, we're all, at the minute, we're all pretty experienced and we've been in a lot of hard fights. You're going to get fighters now. Like I see the tryouts here in Miami like 3 weeks ago. Oh my God, it was packed. Absolutely packed. And you're now getting people who don't want to do boxing, don't want to do MMA, they want to go straight into bare knuckle and they want to train for bare knuckle. Like, so it's a new sport now. So you're gonna, like, in the next 5 years, this is gonna be massive. Like, you're gonna have all these people who, young kids, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21, going into bare knuckle. How long their careers are gonna last, no one really knows.
Yeah, because that's the one. Unless you can learn how to, like, unless there's going to be a new style that evolves from kind of like Baboon's kind of forming as he goes,
get hit.
Or he's not coming out of these fights too scathed, right?
No, like, and that's the thing, like, you know, look, I look at my scars and cuts as badge of honor and everything else, and I like being in great fights, but like I said earlier, you know, it doesn't always win fights, so, you know, Palomino has got the bare knuckle style, you know, down, man, because he just doesn't get hit.
Does he still break his hands after his hands? Everybody's hands are swollen after I see you guys after the fights. I always see that's like unavoidable, right? The way the way your hands get swollen up after.
Yeah, so he broke his hand the last fight before his last fight. He broke his hand and then he re-broke it in the last fight as well.
Yeah.
And it's like with Steve. Steve, first round, boom, broke his hand. He's had to have two hand operations. Now to fix that, first round, bang, broken hand. It's as easy as that. But that's why we love bare knuckle, because it's so different. It's something like that can happen. You know, at the end of the day, Palomino, as good a fighter as he is, breaks his hand in the first round.
The threat level is still the same. So it's same level of risk.
It's, you know, and you find out about yourself. I kept breaking that finger for my first two bare knuckle fights. The first fight, I broke that finger, and then I had like almost something to straighten it out. And I got back into training, and then I re-broke that again in the next fight. So by the time my next bare knuckle fight come about, it still hadn't healed up. So before the fight, I was like 20 minutes before the walk-on, I've just injected it with lidocaine. Couldn't feel it, and I've just gone in there and fought. So I couldn't feel it at all. It worked. It definitely worked.
So you want to be a fighter, huh?
Do what you got to do.
Do what you got to do. Wow, man, that was a good one. Yeah. My man. Anyways, my brother, I really appreciate you coming down for the podcast, man. This was a great chat, bro.
Yeah, no, really enjoyed it.
So the bare knuckle. So we'll finish up with a few more things, man. Like when you do your hands, right? Do you condition your hands now for your fights more than when you were boxing and stuff like this? Do you try to focus on that, or is that?
Yeah. At the gym, we have a thing called I don't know if you've seen it, that Japanese makawari board. So it's like a bit of wood, like on almost like a spring. Mm. And I think it, more than anything, it's a bit of a mental thing as well. Because like after every training session, we're whacking that, and it's like it's a bit of a like, do you know what I mean? Getting you, because using gloves and on the bags and that, and then going and whacking that piece of wood.
Yeah,
I think it's good for you mentally, but it's also good for your hands because
like it builds calluses.
Yeah, calluses, man. Yeah, like at the start when I first doing bare knuckle, my hands were just tearing to bits. Whereas you know now they're calloused up and.
What about when you hit the bag and stuff? Do you hit bag bare knuckle? Do you hit the bag and pads like with MMA gloves or something? Or?
Yeah, I actually like to use MMA gloves for on the pads and the bags because I feel like with a boxing glove, you know, this is something that people are pretty surprised about when I tell them about bare knuckle. You know, obviously with a boxing glove, you can land the glove quite awkwardly. With bare knuckle, you need to land everything on your two knuckles. So. Oh. You need the MMA gloves to be turning them shots in because it's no good being on the pads and the bags. Yeah,
sense of security.
Yeah. Like you need to be going in there and throwing these shots as if you would in a fight. So I like using MMA gloves.
And for sparring too, how do you guys spar with
spar with gloves on?
Gloves, yeah. Just so you can get the work in.
Yeah,
the rounds.
Yeah. Just so you can get the rounds, and obviously, you know, you don't want to be getting cut. And the MMA gloves will still cut you. You know, and things like that. But, you know, we like, again, another thing coming from British boxing, the clinch was just totally new to me. And I learned the hard way, man, Luis Palomino. Because I'm a come forward fighter. I like to get in close and I like to fire off. And as soon as I got close enough, he was just clinching me up and ripping uppercuts into my face. And going into that fight, I thought, the clinch will be fighting, I'll roll out and everything else. But, like, obviously not coming from that MMA background, when he gets you in that clinch, it's very hard to get out of. He's strong and, you know, that experience is very hard to get out of. And I took that for granted.
Because it's like a different type of clinching too, right? From the boxing with the big gloves. And then how do you guys, like, you kind of,
well,
like,
you don't, like, for
just
me.
Just kind of, like, cover up. Like, you kind of, like, do the overhook, you know?
Yeah, like. For me, I don't even look for the clinch when I'm sparring because that's just not something you can do. So it's getting to that point now where I'm sparring and I'm looking for it. And because I want to use it as well. I want to use it. British boxing, you know, as soon as you sort of tie up, referee breaks you like that. So there's no clinching at all. Gotcha. And it's not the dumb thing to just be walking into boxing gyms and start clinching and whacking people. So this is where it's important to be. Like I spar a lot of MMA fighters, Muay Thai fighters, because I need that different style of fighting.
You know what
I
mean? Definitely. Yeah. For sure, man. Wow, that was great, bro. I think we hit a bunch of great stuff, man. That was a great little chat, my brother. Yeah, man, hey, I appreciate the time, man.
Thank you very much, bro. I enjoyed
that, man. Thank you for telling the story, man.
Thank you.
So coming down from England, you're here in Miami. What's going on now? I said you were saying you got the stem cells, doing some stem cell treatment. How's that going?
Yeah, so I had my first session about, three, four weeks ago. I got another session in about a week. I hadn't even heard of stem cell before I come to here, but it's like the new, everyone's like, I've had it in my shoulder, I've had it here, and it's worked. I was speaking to this doctor. He said he'd never done it on someone's on his face or the scar tissue on their face before. Let's try it. Let's see what results we get. So, he's as excited as what I am. And then if it works, all fighters will go there. We're like, stem cells. And let's just hope it brings a bit of longevity to my career. Because at the minute, like, you know, my last fight, I got caught with a flick jab and it just opened up all the scar tissue. The doctor said before the fight, he was like, I can flick you and your cuts will open up. And, you know, it's not so much the pain or anything like that, but it's the blood going in your eyes. You're blind. You're blind.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Like, you just...
You deal with that now with the... Oh, I never even thought about that. So you get the blood in your eye. You've had that when you're scrapping, when the blood's getting in your eyes?
Happens all the time. Like, my last three fights, it's happened. And, like, you know, you're getting cut and you're constantly there, like, trying to get the blood out of your eyes all the time. And as well, where it's only 5 2-minute rounds, you know, you lose the first and second round. You're chasing because I'm cut and I've got blood going in my eyes and I'm blind and everything else. It's just not enough time to adjust and sort of, you know, and come back. So it's difficult. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that the stem cell is going to do something. You know, we'll just see.
Yeah, for sure.
But anything.
Anything that helps, we'll take it. You know what I'm saying? We'll keep that shit rolling, bro. To keep the career going, dog.
That's it, man.
All right, so we got we're in August now. Next fight coming up. Any plans? When are you looking to make your return to the BKFC circle?
So I have actually been speaking to BKFC the last couple of days, and you know, obviously the last fight I had, like, fight of the night, fight of the year contender in my last fight. I want that immediate rematch. I want that for two reasons. Because it was honestly the worst decision. I don't know how they give it to the other guy. Well, I do, because he was the hometown guy and everything else. But that being said, like, secondly, what a great fight it was. And I, like I said earlier, I want to leave a legacy behind. So if we have a good second fight, I'm down for a trilogy. I want to be in these, you know, let's be the first bare knuckle fighters to do a trilogy, you know, leave our legacy, defining fights. But he's gone completely quiet. He doesn't want it. So
he's gone MIA.
So, you know, the thing is, for me now, I'm going to cut whether I'm in with whoever I get in with, I'm going to cut. So I'd rather wait and be in big fights, you know, so I'm not taking all the damage and stuff like that. So
100%,
I'd rather wait for a big fight to come along than just go in there with someone I can blow away. But I'm going to get cut.
I'm going to get cut.
Like, what's the point? It just means I'm 6 months on the sidelines again. So that's why I said, you know, earlier about perhaps, you know, doing the glove boxing now. I mean, I can be licensed here in America. Obviously, back home, I had my license taken away, didn't I?
Oh, you can still fight here.
Yeah, so I can fight
here. Let's go, dog. So, let's get it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that would be pretty cool. Like, yes. I haven't boxed for 6 years since losing my license. So it's a good little story. I come back and started boxing again in America.
Yeah, that would be dope. I think for sure. I wasn't sure with the licensing. I didn't know you can get a license here. Then you're going to get that license here, bro. Yeah. Let's get it. You know what I'm saying?
And who knows? Like, a social media fight or something. They're the fights that make the money.
Oh, my God, dog. That's what we got to do. I got to get on this podcast and start trashing all these TikTokers, bro. Just have them come challenge
that's
me.
That's where the money's at.
Yo, I need to get this TikTok money, dog.
Yeah. Like, that's some the world we live in.
Some of them are fighting bare knuckle. Some of them are fighting bare knuckle.
That Bryce
Hall.
That's
crazy, bro.
Yeah.
These boys are trying to get into bare knuckle. Everybody wants to be top G's, dog. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Isn't it crazy with that? Everybody wants to fight, but I don't know. How do you feel about the whole influencer fighter thing, dog? That's like that one has me. There's the money and the eyes, but I don't like these guys training for a year or two and then acting like they're all like they put in this work. And it's like, yo, it's easy to fight when you're going to make $1 million your first time, bro. This is what pisses me off.
I mean, like, you know,
Yeah,
going to the whole Jake Paul thing. You know, obviously he's come from Disney. You know, he's got all the money in the world to make him a good fighter, especially in boxing. You know, boxing, like, 3 years with all that money behind you for the best training, best nutrition, best of the best. You're going to get good. You're going to get better. You've got to. Like, there's no way you're not. But at the same time, like, he fought, obviously, that Tommy Fury. And I thought he looked like he'd improved. But then that Nate Diaz fight the other day, I thought it was horrendous. I thought he bossed it for two rounds and then he just gassed out. He just gassed out and resorted. Like, I think he threw about four jabs for the rest of the fight, just loading up with the right hand. It was unlicensed boxing at best, really. To be honest, like, you
and
know.
He's talking like he's been training for 15, but this is, I don't mind that, like you said, because he's fighting hard, but.
Yeah.
But then he talks like he's this 15-year veteran and he's suffering from all this pain and
call it what
training.
It is. Call it what it is. It's, you know, white collar, unlicensed celebrity boxing. It's like he got out of the ring, didn't he, and he started calling Canelo out. And you're like,
bro, you couldn't knock out a 155-pound UFC fighter.
The trouble you got, though, Emilio, is that, like, the casual fight fans, like, don't know. So they're like, they see him, oh, he's winning these fights and he's beating Nate Diaz, and they're believing the hype because they don't know fighting, you know. Put him in with Canelo Alvarez and just
stupid. Yo, you put him with any featherweight. You'll put him with like a 135-pound you know, so yeah. Put him with a random Mexican from fucking that gym in Las Vegas and see what happens.
Like, well, I said he's weights he fight at 185 or whatever. He wouldn't win an English title back home. He wouldn't win an English title as a boxer back home in England. No way. The level, you know, English, British level, it's pretty much world level. We've got a very, very good boxing, and he wouldn't win an English title back home. I don't think Tommy Fury would, who he fought. And that's the level we're talking about. Do you know what I mean? But they're earning like 20 million.
They're making the big bucks though.
Yeah.
It's not what is it, not what you know, it's who you know. And like who wants to see you, I guess. The thing people, well, everybody wants to see him lose. So he does a good job of making you hate him. I hate, you know.
And like, not only that, look, the demographic is like 13 to 16 year olds who have watched him on Disney and see him being a complete prick on social media and everything else. So you've got all these like teenagers watching the pay-per-views, and that's, you know,
oh yeah, boxing fans aren't probably even watching it. You know, boxing fighters. Even my friends that fight MMA, I'm like, yo, did you watch the Nate Diaz, Jake Paul? They're like, what? What are you talking about? You know what I'm saying?
It's not fight fans. Fight fans aren't interested in that fight. Fight fans are interested in Terence Crawford, Errol Spence.
Yeah.
You know, them legendary fights.
That's a good way to say it. Like, how you better be good, bro. Like, you have all the bro, with those millions of dollars, you can get the best trainer, the best food. Like, you can start training like a world star athlete, where it might have taken a guy 20 years to get to be able to get the type of training. It'll take a guy to be like, bro, guys will have to train from 5 years old with shitty coaches for the first 10 years. Maybe you have the wrong coach for 8 years.
Exactly.
Then you move away to Las Vegas and you find a good coach. You're like, damn, I had this crazy coach for 5 years. You could have been learning wrong for five, you know, all these things that regular people have to go through.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just right away just Googled the best MMA trainer hired. I mean, he got to get to Google. Best boxing trainer, got him. Best nutritionist, got him. Best strength and conditioning, got him. So within 6 to 7 months, yeah, you're training like a professional. Mm. Like, it's like that guys wouldn't be able to even get to that level. Like,
A lot of pros as well are working alongside their training. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? He gets to train.
He can train full time. Yeah, he starts off his career training three times a day like a professional.
What else have you got to do? Do you know what I mean? Apart from improve with your coach. Like, so... he's got to improve. There's something wrong with you if you don't improve. There's something seriously wrong with you. So
for sure, man.
Yeah, it is what it is, mate. It's just like I say. It's the world we live in now. Social media world. Unfortunately, it sort of takes it away from the real fighters, the guys that are, you know, willing to fight anyone, because, you know, there's a lot of emphasis more so on professional boxing. You know, like having a nice shiny O. Don't mean shit. But
yeah, like you were saying before, the intricacies of the game, when you know it, people don't even know. Like, they'll be setting up guys to set up, you know? Like, they'll be getting a guy, give him five wins so that when you fight him, it looks like you beat a big guy with five wins, even though they knew that the guy with five wins was going to lose to the guy with their 10 wins. It's like they're going, like, deep-level chess, bro. You know what I'm saying?
There's a million belts to fight for as well. So, like, what we've got back in the UK, like to win an English British title, that's like the traditional route, like English British European world, like, and to do it that way is very hard because you're fighting the best of the best. But what promoters are doing now, they're obviously getting prospects, ticket sellers and everything else, and they're getting them like WBC or WBA Pacific European belt against a guy who's 17-0, but you go on BoxRec and the guy's like never fought anyone with a winning record. But to the casual fan, oh my god, he's fighting someone 17-0 for a belt, and then he wins that belt. Yeah, he's the champion of Mickey Mouse, whatever it is. Do you know what I mean? But
and then he also believes in, like you're saying, that's the guy. That's the those, and he's and then
they've just been rooted to the top. They're being, and that will get hit. That will get that guy a. He'll be ranked in the top 10 in the world. And then before you know it, he's fighting for the world title. And he's jumped over the English, the British, the European. He's jumped over all of that because he sells tickets. That's boxing. And that's... I know that for a fact because, like I say, I've been in it for years. Yeah. And that's why I don't really watch it now, because I just like... Ugh.
It's probably left a sour taste in your mouth.
Yeah,
you know?
It's just like, you know, as a 18, 19-year-old, you go in like, yeah, I'm a professional fighter and everything else. And then a few years down the line, you're like, right, yeah. Because I did get warned at the start. People would be like, look, there's only one person who makes money in this game, and it's the promoter. I'm like, yeah, whatever.
We got to become promoters.
Yeah. I do believe a lot more fighters need to be managers, promoters, because... let's face it, promoters are coming fresh out of business school, university, with all their degrees in business and everything else, and they know how to talk. Like, look, you know, fighters, myself, you know, you tell me to fight someone, I'll fight them, you know, and they know how to talk to you, give you the spiel, yeah, this, that, you're going to be a star and everything else before, you know, they're getting exactly how they want it to be, their way. Yeah, fighters just get used, man.
Yeah, and it's always the guys, and you know what's, you know what crazy, what bugged me out about the fight game? It's like, and I find this across the board, like, yeah, fighters, I mean, MMA, for me, MMA is a little bit young, boxing. But damn, we know it's great with boxing. This guy, Hearns, was a boxer, and he's freaking screwing you over and doing that shady shit. But, you know, that's what doesn't make no sense. But
I think, like, more so with managers, I'd like to see a lot more fighters be managers. I think,
yes.
I think we can just, yeah, fighters can just be looked after so much better. As a boxer, I wasn't looked after, you know. My... Like I say, I should have moved up a weight probably two fights before I did. But, you know, you're making everyone around you money, boxing on TV with title fights, and that's all anyone's really interested in.
Yeah, exactly, man. That's it always seems like the guys involved in the sport are always the guys who didn't have the cojones to get in there. Mm. So they just do all the other stuff. So that's where, man, you kind of like, you get like the kind of these weaselly characters. Because you get all the, because fighters are, I mean, my thing with fighters is across the board is like, we're all very like honest and brutal. Like, we're fighters, right? So like, we're kind of like honest with it because we just want to scrap. We wear it all hard on our sleeve, bro. We get in a fucking cage naked and express ourselves for fucking, you know? But then you got the guys who, they want all the good stuff from the game. They want to stand there at the weigh-ins in the middle.
The fight.
They want to hold the belt up for you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But you don't want to go in the cage. Like, you don't want to hold up your own belt. You want to hold up somebody else's belt. So it's like a weird character that comes with that scene.
Well, like, social media's just give, like, it's just made, like I say, promoters, managers, it's give them a little level of fame where they're trying to be more famous than the fighters are. And you're like, hold on, you're just a manager or a promoter. Sit back down, do your job. Like, let the fighters have what they've trained for and what they've fought for all their life. Stop trying to be more famous than the fighters, because that fucking irritates me.
Bro, that's, when you start seeing managers and promote, when you guys seeing these guys doing interviews and stuff like that, you're like, yo, we don't really need to know all that, you know? Like, I call them spotlight guys. Yeah. You know, they just want to be in the spotlight. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But they don't want to put the work, dog, or they went to the gym, they wanted to fight, but then they couldn't fight.
Yeah.
So then they're like, kind of like stuck around. Like I say,
they come out of university fresh with a business degree and know how to make money and know how all the talk and everything else, but they can't do what we do. So they should just sit down quietly, enjoy the show, let us get the plaudits and everything else, because I do see it all the time. I watch a lot of YouTube when I wake up in the morning. I like to hear a lot of, like, you know, boxing podcasts and things like that, and yeah, it's all too many managers, promoters and stuff like that getting all the limelight and not enough of the fighters. And I'm seeing more and more of that.
And the social media era is getting crazy.
Yeah.
With everything. It's like, it's hard because you don't want to do it, but then you kind of need to. Because then they're not going to want to, people ain't going to want to mess with you, you know? Now they look at your Instagram as like your resume, and I'm like, damn, where, you know, like, you got to like.
And I just got mine deleted for the second time. So I'm
Hopefully we didn't say nothing in this podcast. Like, we didn't get into no COVID or nothing. You know what I mean? So I think we stood pretty clear of some cancelable things, you know?
Yeah.
But anyways, my man. Oh yeah, we'll see with the Hearns thing. I don't want to get this.
Yeah.
We release this podcast and be like, "Yo, I took a picture," and then my podcast gets taken off.
I've only got 1,000 followers on my new one. I don't care about that. So, the more people who find out what that guy's really about, the better.
They
better
need to. For everyone. The less people will mess with, we need less people to mess with them.
Exactly.
Because ignorance is bliss, dog. You don't know, and then you'd be like, I wish I would have known that. Now, somebody right now is signing a contract right now, dog. Somebody's getting told the same spiel. Don't worry about this fight.
There's 100 me's 10 years ago being told exactly what they want to hear in order to get their fight. So another thing about this fight. So I just won the English title, right? Just won the English title. And, like, look, it was my first big belt. I actually went to on holiday to Egypt and I took the belt with me. I had it. I slept with it. I was so proud. Do you know what I mean? And then I got home about 10 days later and I had a letter from the British Border Control that said that they wanted the belt back. And if I wanted a replica, I had to pay £750 for it, right? So...
Yeah, you can't even keep your belt. They don't know that.
No, you can't keep it. You've got to buy your belt. Even though you've just trained your ass off and just risked your life for it, you better pay for that belt. So I've then gone sat in the Matchroom office and I've been talked into this fight with this whole free fight contract, and Eddie Hearn's given me £1,000 to vacate my belt so that two other people can fight for it. £1,000, man. But at the time, I'm 23, man. I ain't got hardly any money. I'm living on my own. I'm trying to create this dream. So
that's good money, bro.
Good money, £1,000. Like, now, nah, like, oh my God. I give up a belt that I give everything for £1,000. But there you go.
Oh, it's been a ruthless one. But now we're in bare knuckle. You're living there. You got that BKFC like money.
I'm living the dream now, man. I'm living the dream. I love this sport. That's why I'm still here.
We left the wraps in England, bro. Yeah. Now we're going to how do they wrap your hands? That's wild, the way they wrap your hands. They just put like a little thing on your wrist,
just
right?
Just your wrist. Yeah.
That's wild. My boy Will Chope, when he used to fight MMA, he used to never wrap his hands, and the commission used to get mad, and he just put, like, when he fought in the UFC, he didn't want to wrap his hands in the UFC fight, so they just put one wrap, they put one piece of tape around his wrist, and then sign it. Shh.
I've seen that Will Chope. He's done a lot of bare knuckle now.
Bro, dog. So the first time I heard about bare knuckle, he was getting good checks to go to like England and London and stuff like this, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like, did that kind of start? I feel like that's what I mean, like with the England thing. Like, I remember when I was in Asia and Thailand, like people were taking big money fights in England before I heard about it in America more. I don't know.
I would say that BKB's been around for longer than BKFC, but BKFC's just exploded quicker.
Yeah. They did a good job with the marketing. Yeah, what's the name of the owner guy? He's like a Dana White. He's like a real badass.
Dave Feldman.
This guy. Yeah, like he's the real...
I mean, the production, like, so it's great. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's an event, and that's something that they don't do nowhere near as well back in England. Like, it's good bare knuckle fighting and all that, but it's an absolute event. You know, like you say, that the shows at the Hard Rock are just
massively packed. Booming. Oh, but you fought outside of the... How were the shows outside of the Florida compared for the rest of the state?
So I fought in Biloxi. I fought Charles Bennett in Biloxi. I mean, that was in the middle of the pandemic, so it was a bit... there was like a limited capacity. Everyone hated me. They were booing, USA, USA. It was funny. It was great. It was a great experience. And then my other fight was in South Carolina an arena there, I can't think what it was called now. Big arena, really nice place. Greenville. It was a nice city. It was a nice city.
A lot of people. It was full.
Yeah. A lot of people. These BKFC shows are.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, they got a crazy fan, in, bro.
Yeah, because you haven't got to be a fight fan to enjoy.
Nah. Yeah, there's no stand 'em up ref. There is no stand 'em up ref. Like the part that people hate in fighting, they completely take it out. Yeah. There's like no stalling. Nah. It's just war, bro.
Yeah.
You know what I noticed too in bare knuckle? Like I noticed in the one fights I went to. Yo, everybody who got dropped in the first round won in the second round.
Yeah.
So, like, getting dropped means nothing, right? In the beginning, I feel... Yeah. Sometimes I almost feel like it's, like, the guy who gets dropped usually wins, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, it's a little bit of an adrenaline dump, too. I don't know. Like, you try to finish the guy, and then, like, you blow your wad, and the guy finishes him, you know?
Well, when I fought for the world title back in the BKB, back in the UK, I fought that Sean George, who, like I say, like, legend of the game, had about 22 bare knuckle fights, and he dropped me in the first round, and I got up, and about 20 seconds later I dropped him, and it was just there. That was seven rounds we were doing there as well.
What?
Yeah.
Why seven rounds? Because it was
so
a title,
title fights back home in England are seven rounds. So my hands, if you like the commentary, they're like, oh my God, it looks like he's wearing boxing gloves, his hands are so tall. My hands were horrible, man. I ended up in hospital after that fight.
What do you do with your hands after the fight, bro? Where do you put them? Like in ice or like...
Yeah, like...
They hurt, they're aching, right? Like,
yeah. After a fight, it's like for like that little window of adrenaline where you're like, yeah, I feel amazing. And then after that adrenaline goes, oh my God.
You feel everything, right?
So like that fight, I went to my hotel and I actually went into a little bit of shock. like, and I felt freezing cold. I've got two duvets around me. I'm shivering like that. And I just, like, I felt like I've been hit by a bus, man. I'm just shivering so cold like that. People don't see that after the fights, man. Like,
oh, the after the fights, yeah, dog, of yeah, those wars, you yeah, know, boxing yeah, fights too, yeah, you feel it, yeah, huh?
Like, well, MMA, like, at least I'm only getting punched in the body and the head. Yeah. Like I say, the things that make me wince most when I watch MMA are like the leg kicks.
Bro, I've had legs, yeah, I've had fights where, like, my fucking shins and legs, and, like, throw a couple of low kicks, and I throw a lot of low kicks, you yeah, hit the shin, you hit the knee. You know, and then, like, yeah, like, my feet are, like, you got, like, balloon feet. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah, I've had those. But my hands have always been relatively, for me, it's just tripping you guys out because I yeah, see the hands the way they looked, you know? Yeah. But it's fine. I never thought about it. I was like, oh, yeah, I do the same thing. Yeah. Like, I'm kicking with my bare feet. So, like, I feel you. You know what I'm yeah, saying? But I don't know, bro. The hand.
I mean, how do you strengthen your legs?
You throw. For me, it's just kicking the bag. Like, you get a dead bag. You kick it. People do. They have tricks. Like, you can get, like a iron thing, and you can, yeah, like, kind of roll out your shins. My yeah, shins are pretty good. My ankles, you know what I'm saying? That's like your feet is what gets fucked
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah,
from the ankles and shit, yeah, kicking yeah, too low, you know? Yeah. But the shin, you can really get hard, you know?
Yeah.
But then you kick the knee or whatever, you know?
I think like something that Palomino, he's had a load of surgery and he had a toe, his big toe, and from all the kicking he said, like, he's just had problems for years with it. And his wow, knee as well. Done his ACL in his knee. Like, them leg kicks, man.
He has some of the most ruthless leg kicks in MMA history, bro.
Yeah.
horrendous. Like, he started like a famous move now. Like, he was kind of like one of the innovators, you know? The calf kick.
Yeah.
It's kind of like his thing. And now it's like a huge phenomenon in the UFC. You yeah, know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, my coaches in Thailand, we all do it, you know? But we all kind of got that from him, you know? So.
Yeah.
My man. Anyways, bro, my editor's gonna kill me.
We could chat forever.
I'll be here all day. That's how it is. Like the first 30 minutes, yeah, you know, and then after like an hour, and it just fucking, then it doesn't stop. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right, yeah, so we got BKFC. No MMA for you? Jiu-jitsu? You ever rolled around?
No, like I said, because like boxing was our sport 20. It wasn't, yeah, MMA literally was not even a thing in England, you know, 20 sure, years ago. So, yeah, I think if I had my time again and MMA was there, I think I'd probably do it, MMA, yeah, to be honest, because, you know, the great thing about MMA is there's so many different ways that you can win a fight, isn't there? Like, someone yeah, can be so dominant on their feet, but get beat, submitted, you know, it's so many different ways to get beat. They're weaponed, man. I have the ultimate respect for MMA. It's just...
You watch weapon. It, you're a fan, right?
I watch it more than boxing, right? Yeah, 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 like, good. Yeah, like I say, like I watched that, you know, like the Gaethje Poirier fight, and
what a fight, though! Yeah, oh my gosh!
Yeah,
MMA is so good because they put the big fights. They don't bullshit.
It's great.
You know what I'm saying? Like how long we waited for the Crawford fight, where they were talking about that. I've been hearing about this fight for years. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But now, like MMA, boom, they make it happen, mm-hmm, bro. They get after it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like
all the top guys have got a few losses because from day one they've been fighting the best, haven't they? So
yes.
And I love that. And you know, at the end of the day, I mean, Dana White's obviously monopolized it with the UFC, but like, if you're contracted to fight, he picks you the fights. If you say no, he'll just cancel your contract, and that's how it should be. Like, stop dodging fights, put these big names together. That's what the fans want to see. And exactly. I sort of see that happening with BKFC a bit now as well, yes, which is great. Because, like, obviously with me, I took that massive, you know, going to fight Palomino, I lost on points. Then I was straight back into another unbeaten fight. And then after that, I'm straight back into another against another unbeaten fight.
Yeah, they got
fight.
You going after it.
I, like, you know, and you can probably appreciate it as well. Like, being, you know, 22 years deep into a career now, I need a fight to motivate me. I can't have fights. If I know I can get in there at 60% and win, that doesn't interest me. I want that little bit of fear, like I said earlier, I need that. I need that where, like, if I don't perform and I don't train, I'm going to get beat here. And it's motivation.
That's what it is. Yeah, and like, you need that, like, the little bit of something to wake up for, mm-hmm, something to excite you, mm-hmm, you know? Yeah. That's how Nate Diaz talks about it. When Nate Diaz says he took a break from MMA, and they were like, oh, he's like, because everybody sucked. He had that famous, like, post-fight speech. Like, he's like, yeah, I'm taking a break because y'all suck or yeah, whatever. You yeah, know what I mean? Yeah. So he's like, he was saying the same thing. So I think, yeah, like, the Jake Paul kind of, I don't know if he woke up for that fire. He was just collecting some bread.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
He was saying the exact same thing. Like, you know, like something to get you going, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, brother. Man. Anyways, big dog, once again.
Thank you.
I appreciate the time, man. What else we got going on? We hit bare knuckle. We hit everything, bro. Bare knuckle, boxing. Yeah. porn. You know what I'm saying? We've been a man of many lives, bro. We're just getting started, baby. 32 years young, dog.
32 years.
Man. So I feel like, you definitely got a whole nother tank in you, bro.
Definitely, yeah, man. 30's the new 20 for real.
1,000%.
For real. Dog. Like, because, and it sounds funny because, like, people say, like, would I go back to being 21 again? I wouldn't. Like, I wouldn't because I don't know shit, man. Like, going forward now, I'm ready.
You know? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
We're ready to go.
Ready to go, man.
Let's get it, my man. Ladies and gentlemen, Honey Badger Hour. That was a big one. Thank you guys for tuning. Where can the fans follow you and get you at? Oh, yeah, we ain't got...
So I've got a new LTornado01. That's the account that I'm using at the moment. I'm hoping that my other account may appear sometime soon, bro. Maybe, but this will be a backup account if not. But who knows?
I was looking for you to send you a message to get you in the pod. I had to message Steve. I was like, yo. I was like, what? You just got to have Instagram? He's like, yo, I got deleted. I was like, oh, I was like.
Just like that, man. Just like that.
So, guys, don't mess with no, watch out with the fake contracts on there. Instagram is watching. All right, Instagram, we love you. Don't cancel us. All right, YouTube, we're going to play the game, dog. Ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yeah, so
LTornado01.
We're going to put it down on the links, guys. Yeah. Make sure to follow Tyler. All my
fights are on YouTube. I also have a documentary that's on YouTube called Unbroken. It's won a lot of awards. It's had like 1.3 million views. And that's the build up to when I won the World Bare Knuckle title back home in the UK. It's cool. It's really cool. It has all the build up to you know, and all the after effects of a bare knuckle fight as well. So it's interesting.
That's a heavy one. I was watching that the other day. So hell yeah. Make sure you guys check that out. Honey Badger Hour. We're out. Woof. That was awesome. My man.
That was wicked.
Fuck yeah, bro. That was wicked, man. My G. I love these podcasts.
Thank you.